It's Thursday, April 18th. They agree the law should go away, so why are they keeping it on the books? We start here. Lawmakers in Arizona deadlock over a Civil War-era abortion law.
We are the representatives of the people, and the people want this repealed.
Despite an outraged electorate, some officials say they're in no hurry to change it. Whistleblowers, you're now free to move around the Capitol.
I was ignored. I was told not to create delays. I was told, frankly, to shut up.
Boeing employees, past and present, sound the alarm. And if you're wagering on how many players will be banned for gambling, maybe take the over.
Every league has a partnership, and ads are now everywhere.
The NBA calls foul, but raises questions for the entire sports landscape. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. It was barely a week ago that the Arizona State Supreme Court ruled that, short of a national standard like Roe v. Wade, there was only one state law on the books that could currently govern abortions. That law, they say, is from 1864.
Outrage from Arizona's Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs.
Do the right thing right now and repeal this 1864 ban.
And for the last week, most of Arizona's state lawmakers on either side of the aisle have shared basically the same message on that it's dumb. It's dumb, they say, that our guiding statute on abortion should be a law from before we were a state, before women had the right to vote. Democrats are saying this, Republicans are saying this, voters are saying this. And yet, for the last week, Republican lawmakers have been unwilling to get together with Democrats at the state capitol and repeal that 1864 law. They effectively fled town for a long weekend while women's groups begged for answers. Well, yesterday, lawmakers arrived back in Phoenix to vote on a potential repeal. And not once, but twice, it failed. ABC's Elizabeth Schulze joins us from Phoenix this morning. Elizabeth, I know that this 1864 law, like, there's still a little while before it would go into effect, but, I mean, this is still the ruling then. Like, almost no abortions would be allowed here.
This 1864 law, Brad, that was a Civil War-era law that prevents women from getting abortion in every single instance except in the case to save the life of a mother, is still basically upheld. Lawmakers couldn't get their act together to repeal the law, despite very concentrated efforts by Democrats in Arizona's state legislature.
This issue is very simple.
What we saw yesterday was Democrats teeing up what they thought would be a vote to basically reverse the decision from the state Supreme Court.
Under the Arizona state constitution, 31 members of this body are required to adopt a temporary rule, which is exactly what we are doing.
They were hopeful that they'd be able to get two Republicans from the House to come to their side, repeal the law, and then two Republicans in the Senate to do the same thing.
We are the representatives of the people, and the people want this repealed. It is time to have a vote.
Well, what happened? Not that.
Clerk, record the vote. 30 ayes, 30 nays. The ruling of the chair is upheld.
They couldn't even get a vote together. We saw a bunch of procedural motions, and essentially the House Speaker, who is a Republican, came out and said,
"The last thing we should be doing today is rushing a bill through the legislative process."
He explicitly said that any legislation dealing with the 1864 ban needed to go through a more extensive process.
The courts have not even had an opportunity to determine if the pre-Roe law is constitutional.
And that paved the path for Republicans in the House to fall in line. Only one GOP lawmaker was willing to go with Democrats in saying that this ban should be appealed, despite the initial bipartisan outrage over it, despite the fact that former President Trump, Brad, has said that this law goes too far. Here we are at the end of the day. The legislature didn't do anything. And right now that 1864 ban is still upheld.
Why? Right. Because you just mentioned it yourself, right? Former President Trump says this ruling has gone too far. You've got other top Republicans from around Arizona being like, this law seems silly. So, I mean, where are the no votes coming from? Like, what is the rationale?
Well, and this is why it's always good to come to state capitals and actually talk to these lawmakers and say, what are you thinking here? So we pressed several Republican lawmakers and said, is this really where your voters are? Is this really what the leadership in your party wants to do when it comes to the issue of abortion? And frankly, Brad, each of the people we talked to said yes.
Arizona is a pro-life state, and that law was put into place by people that believe in the sanctity of life.
We talked to a state Republican Senator Dave Farnsworth. He's an outspoken anti-abortion activist.
We have the best law possible on the books right now.
The 1864 law is the best law possible.
Yes.
The fact is that they, at least right now, are not worried about backlash when it comes to November. They didn't seem worried when I asked if this is against the will of former President Trump.
Leaders in your own party, including former President Trump, say this ban goes too far.
I believe I heard President Trump say Arizona needs to fix this, however he said it. He rightfully says that this is a state's rights issue. Each state has the responsibility to make their own laws.
And for now, they're willing to kind of slow roll this process. What Republicans did say is that voters are going to decide this issue in November. And that gets to this question of abortion being on the ballot here in the state of Arizona in the fall.
Yeah. What is next now? If this is failing now this week, I mean, are there next steps here at all?
Right. So the state Senate, where there are Republicans who seem more open to going along with Democrats, did introduce its own legislation that would basically repeal the ban. And they're trying to move forward with that. That's going to take a couple of days to work through the legislative process. The question would still be, could that pass the House? Arizona, of course, has a Democratic governor. She's outspoken against the ban. She wants this to get done quickly.
They should listen to their constituents, 9 out of 10 Arizonans who support access to abortion, and do the right thing so that we are not living under the confusion.
In the meantime, for now, the attorney general in the state here has said she won't enforce the ban. So she has said the soonest it could take effect is June. But that's not that far away for some abortion providers.
These cases have been in the courts, and we've been awaiting decisions, not knowing when they're going to come.
We actually went to a clinic in Phoenix yesterday. We talked to Dr. Deshaun Taylor. She told us that she is telling patients that they should be preparing that soon they might not be able to get an abortion at her clinic if they need one.
So really helping people understand, you know, we need you to show up to this appointment, because some people will make appointments and not show up. And so that's very concerning when it's like, okay, well, somebody else could have gotten that abortion that you didn't show up for your appointment for.
She also said that that could ultimately force her clinic to shut down because that's the main type of reproductive care that they offer.
My message to lawmakers is that anyone who votes against repeal is on the wrong side of this. And I hope that the voters will make their displeasure known at the ballot box in November.
So now you have activists putting forward basically dueling ballot measures to put this directly to voters in the fall. One would call for a constitutional right to an abortion. The other would try to put more limitations on it. And what's really important here, Brad, is Arizona isn't the only state where this is going to be up to voters. We know up to 14 states will include abortion measures on the ballot in November. We have seen already that when abortion's on the ballot, it drives turnout. And in every instance that it's been on the ballot since the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, the abortion rights position has won. So this is really critical when it comes to turnout. It's something that lawmakers are aware of. But for now, Brad, Republican lawmakers here say they're not worried.
Yeah, which is why it's been so wild to watch this response from high-ranking Republicans in the state. Because originally, some of them had said this should be the law. Then, as this ruling came in, they were like, well, this is bad. Now they're essentially saying, let's wait and see, please. Elizabeth Schulze, there in Phoenix. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, he was cleared for takeoff, but where was his evidence? Inside the Boeing hearings after the break. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here. With daylight saving time upon us, we're looking forward to more daylight and longer days from March through November. And while setting our clocks forward gives us the illusion of more time, it doesn't necessarily help businesses find qualified candidates any sooner. Fear not, there is a solution. ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is your 24/7 hiring partner working tirelessly to connect you with the right candidate. Once you post your job on ZipRecruiter, it gets distributed to over 100 job sites, ensuring you reach a diverse pool of qualified individuals. Their smart technology scans thousands of resumes, matching you with people whose skills perfectly align with your job requirements. Spring forward with a new hiring partner, ZipRecruiter, and find top talent sooner. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter for free, ZipRecruiter.com/start here. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/start here. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. You remember earlier this month when a Boeing engineer came forward as a whistleblower, claiming that the company had been producing planes that could conceivably fall apart after years of use? Well, yesterday, Congress heard testimony not only from him, but from another former Boeing engineer as part of hearings related to the airplane manufacturer's safety record. Let's go to ABC's Sam Sweeney, who covers transportation for us. Sam, there were two different hearings here, right? I mean, what were they about and what did we learn from them?
Well, the first hearing was about a report that had been done and released in February about the safety culture at Boeing and things that they can improve on. And it was three witnesses that explained to senators what they experienced. And the bottom line is that Boeing has work to do.
It sounds like there was not exactly a promotion of people sort of stopping the line or raising these issues. I mean, is there any evidence that there was actually the opposite, that there was retribution or that people were actually penalized for raising some safety concerns?
Yes, that's correct. We heard reports. We heard several reports of people that felt that they were transferred or didn't get the raise that they were expecting. Now,
some of the frontline employees weren't comfortable coming forward with some of their issues or some of the problems that they saw, and that Boeing has to address it. But the second hearing is what a lot of people are talking about, and that is this whistleblower who just came forward claiming that the 787, one of Boeing's best-selling jets, could fall apart after years of service, extended use, because of the way that the fuselage is connected.
In a rush to address its bottlenecks in production, Boeing hit problems, pushing pieces together with excessive force to make him appear that the gaps don't exist, even though they exist.
The claims are that the way that the fuselage works is it's made up of multiple parts. And during manufacturing, Boeing puts those pieces of the fuselage and connects them together. And what he is saying is that there are spaces or gaps in between where they connect it. And when you think gap, you may think a large area. We're talking about the size of 2 human hairs.
I found gaps exceeding the specification that were not properly addressed 98.7% of the time.
And this is not the first time this has come up. Back in 2020, Boeing was alerted to potential issues within the 787 fleet, and they actually halted deliveries for nearly 2 years because of this potential problem. And they combed through piece by piece. They developed new technology, and they came up with a fix in conjunction with the FAA, who approved the new process to make sure that these planes are safe. So much so that they tested the fuselage of the plane and simulated 165,000 takeoffs and landings to see if the fuselage would hold up. That's 3 times more than the average 787 will do in its entire lifetime. And they did not find any problems.
It's actually the longest fatigue test of any commercial airplane that's ever been run.
And what they're saying is that this plane is made of carbon fiber. It's not metal like previous generations of airplanes that can experience metal fatigue and break apart like we've seen over the years on some planes. This is carbon fiber, and it really just doesn't break like metal. Once metal on an older style plane breaks, it can, you know, unravel like a zipper. But that didn't happen on this carbon fiber jet.
Wait, so essentially the whistleblower in the second hearing is bringing forward a claim that you're saying has kind of already been noted by Boeing and the federal government. I mean, did he bring any evidence along with him?
Yeah, more or less that's what is happening here. And what is so striking is that during this hearing, neither senators nor the witnesses brought up the fact that Boeing stopped deliveries and slowed production for nearly 2 years, costing Boeing $6 billion. Nobody brought that up. And he did not bring any evidence or show any evidence during this hearing. And last week, when he first came forward in a Zoom press conference with his attorneys, he said, and the lawyer said, that they would be giving us evidence next week.
As our client alleges and has proof, using Boeing's own data, these planes are being built improperly and will likely experience fatigue or failure far earlier in their life.
And we did not get that. But his lawyers do tell ABC News that the evidence is there, it is documented, and it has been turned over to the committee. We've reached out to the committee to see if they will be releasing that, and they have not made a decision.
Now, Sam, I'm old enough to remember earlier this year when another Boeing whistleblower died in between deposition appearances, right? Nobody was claiming there was any foul play, and yet there were lots of raised eyebrows because of the timing of it all. And yesterday, it almost seemed like these senators were kind of asking if this whistleblower was safe. Are there concerns here?
Well, he says that, you know, he's faced retaliation after he brought up these claims.
I want to make clear that I have raised these issues over 3 years. I was ignored. I was told not to create delays. I was told, frankly, to shut up.
In fact, he says he was moved from the 787 production line to the 777 production line.
You mentioned also a threat to your physical safety, someone saying...
Someone told me they're going to kill. They would have killed someone like me if you said something, what you said. So.
He also says that he found a nail in his tire and that he took it to the shop. And he believes that someone at Boeing put that nail in his tire, but he says he doesn't have any proof of that. He also says that his boss called him on his personal cell phone and berated him for 40 minutes.
They call you on your personal phone to let you know that they know where you live, they know where you are, and they can hurt you.
These are the types of retaliation that he says he is facing.
What is Boeing saying about all this?
Well, it's really interesting because over the last couple of months, Boeing has obviously been under fire, and they have been transparent that they have issues, they need to work through them, they've been having factory stand downs. But on this particular issue, they are fiercely defending their product line, the 787 and the 777. So much so that for the first time since the Alaska incident, they brought a number of reporters to their South Carolina plant to meet with their most senior engineers, take us on the 787, and show us exactly why this is not an issue. You know, they said that they have inspected hundreds and hundreds of planes, the oldest plane being, you know, in the air since 2012 with more than 16,000 flights, has shown no signs of any of these issues. You also have to keep in mind that Boeing is begging its employees to come forward with any information that may, you know, signal that there's a problem with one of their airplanes or a part of the manufacturing process. And they are getting a surge of reports. Normally in an average year, they get about 400 a year. They are telling us that they are getting more than 400 a month. And they are going through them each week, and they are meticulously combing through to make sure that they are addressed and that there's not a larger problem that, you know, would have to involve the FAA.
Yeah, it sounds like door plugs are one thing. Door plugs flying out of planes and depressurized cabins are one thing. This, according to Boeing, is very much another that they can counter very easily. And yet, there's this whole question about whether employees feel free to come forward. That, I guess, will be the question here. All right, Sam Sweeney, covering transportation. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It was a big deal when baseball superstar Shohei Ohtani came forward recently to say that his interpreter had been caught stealing money for paying gambling debts to an illegal California bookie.
Ipe has been stealing money from my account and has told lies.
For one, it was big because Ohtani is arguably the face of his sport. But the bigger issue here might be that pro sports cannot afford a gambling crisis right now. Now that sports betting is legal in so many states, with so much money flowing through it, the idea that a player would be betting on his league presents a lot of uncomfortable questions. Well, in recent days, that interpreter has said emphatically Ohtani himself knew nothing of his gambling habit. Federal authorities have made no accusations of Ohtani himself, but then yesterday, just as the pro basketball basketball playoffs are getting underway, the NBA announced that it's issuing a lifetime ban on one of its players. The reason? Betting on basketball. Let's bring in Swan Tai, senior investigative reporter for our partners at ESPN. Swan, I mean, I follow sports a little, and I've never heard of this guy. Who is Jontay Porter, and what is he accused of doing?
Right. So Jontay Porter is a center, or I should say was a center, for the Toronto Raptors. And he is accused of betting on NBA games. That is a big no-no. And more specifically, he's accused of providing bettors with information about his own health, how he was feeling, and whether or not he would be able to participate. And so it's accused that he, these other bettors, had this information, this inside information, and placed as much as $80,000 on some bets that would feature Porter's statistics.
Like I think he'll make this many points. And the bettor's like, I think he'll make 0 points today.
Exactly. And in both of those occasions, Porter is said to have pulled himself out of the game due to injury or illness. So that's why the NBA launched this investigation. There were some, they were flagged to these unusual bets that were placed on DraftKings. And then they investigated it and they found that Porter placed at least 13 bets on NBA games using associate accounts. And so there it is, a big taboo, betting on NBA games.
Yeah. How significant was this to the NBA? Or like, we don't see lifetime bans for almost anything except this exact scenario.
I mean, I think that's the thing. All these people I've spoken to in the past have really worried about the integrity of the game and undermining the integrity of the game. That is what both pro and, I wouldn't call them anti, but those who advocate for the other side of it, for more regulation, would say that they really worry about the integrity of the sport. So for something like this to happen is a big deal, that it could potentially undermine a fan's view of how legitimate this game is a big concern for anyone anywhere.
And more broadly, I'm thinking, like, sports betting becomes a bigger part of the culture for, like, it's legal in so many places. I know so many, particularly young men, who, like, just whip their phone out of their pocket and place a quick $5 or $10 or $50 bet. Does that, I mean, it makes sense that I guess a lot of young guys who come into sports would like be betting themselves. How much is the culture of betting impacting what we're talking about now?
It's legal in 38 states plus the District of Columbia. And it, each state and district has its own regulatory scheme, which makes it a little bit more difficult to figure out what you can do in which state. In terms of your question, I actually spoke to a psychiatrist at UCLA who studies this, Dr. Timothy Fong, and he talks about how he treats patients now who are athletes who feel the stress of this, who say that this sports betting has taken the joy out of playing the game.
For the athletes, you're saying?
For the athletes. And I think part of it, you see the NCAA trying to ban prop bets in that as well. You know, like, these are real impactful things.
You know, they got my telephone number and were sending me, you know, crazy messages about, you know, where I live and my kids and all that stuff. So it is a dangerous game.
You are dealing with social media, fans yelling at them, miss the shot.
Oh, and prop bets being like these more elaborate things of like, I know how many free throws this person's going to make. So all of a sudden this random free throw is a huge deal in the arena.
Huge deal. And you're cheering for them to miss, not because you want your team to win, but you're cheering them to miss because you want to win the bet.
To half the world, I'm just helping them make money on DraftKings or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a prop.
And the psychological impact on the player when they get, you know, harassed online for not making the over and under, or not, you know, whatever the case is that caused a fan or a viewer or a bettor to lose, is being studied. And I think that's something to look at in the future.
Well, and just to be clear, like, ESPN and ABC, both owned by the same parent company, Disney. And ESPN, like many sports media companies now, has like ESPN Bet. There are lots of companies that are sponsored by DraftKings, by these betting sites. And then you look at the leagues themselves that are very much leaning into all this. I mean, is the fact that sports betting is so much more just everywhere around the sport, does that make it more likely that we'll see this more and more?
So it's not just limited to the NBA. It is also the NFL, the NCAA. I mean, we've seen it everywhere. Just earlier this year, we had the Jacksonville Jaguars have an employee who embezzled $22 million and then placed bets, $20 million worth of bets with different type of books. We've had the NCAA with a few scandals here with University of Iowa and Iowa State.
Both the Iowa and Iowa State athletic departments are facing allegations of sports betting involving some of its student athletes.
The NFL suspended three members of the Lions for betting on NFL games. So this is not just limited to the NBA. You can see it in just about any sport, and every league has a partnership, right? And ads are now everywhere. I've spoken to some lawyers who say the advertisement for these sports books is going to be the next area of concern. Similar to cigarettes were in the 80s and 90s for young people, they view that sports betting advertisement will get the same kind of scrutiny. If you ask the sports books, they'll disagree with that, right? I think they'll say, absolutely not. We are saying, you know, that's not the same thing. It's apples to oranges. So I think to answer your question, it is in a lot of places, and you can't really watch a game now, any game now, without some sort of tie-in or advertisement to it.
It struck me that Adam Silver, the current NBA commissioner, is a longtime proponent of legalized sports betting. He says, of course, about this, that it's a cardinal sin for any NBA athlete to be betting on the league. No comment from Jontay Porter on any of this. Swan Tai from our partners at ESPN, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, one more quick break. When we come back, when it rains, it pours, but hopefully not this much. One last thing is next.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
And one last thing. In an average year, the Middle Eastern city of Dubai gets less than 4 inches of rain. It's a desert. The desert nation of the United Arab Emirates is famously dry. Well, this week, in a single day, Dubai got 6 inches of rain. This storm was unlike anything locals, or foreigners for that matter, had ever seen. Cars stopped moving in waist-high waters. Some residents started using boats to travel around their neighborhoods. Dubai's airport, the busiest international airfield on Earth, was rendered unusable. And in some environmental circles, this raised a question: did Dubai wreak this havoc on itself? See, in recent years, the Emirati government has been experimenting with cloud seeding, a practice where you get clouds to render more rain. Our own Ginger Z wrote along with an American cloud seeding company last year.
Has the desperation in the mega drought made the interest in cloud seeding skyrocket?
Oh, definitely.
The idea is that there's all this moisture already in a cloud, but that cloud often just keeps drifting along. It's not until droplets have something to cling onto that they can become raindrops. Cloud seeding flights basically fly straight into the cloud. They inject all these tiny particles inside, which act like magnets for rain. Dubai is a city that's growing exponentially in a place where fresh water is shrinking. Some meteorology sites reported that just ahead of this rainfall, these cloud seeding flights had been up in the air over Dubai. The government denied these flights had taken off Tuesday, but they didn't say anything about Monday, the day these storms started. Regardless of how many flights there might have been, though, experts say there's no way these storms were created by cloud seeding. That's just not the way it works. You might get 10% more rain from a cloud, but you're not creating a storm out of thin air.
It's likely that this storm was kind of supercharged by climate change because there's just more moisture available in the air for any storm system to then precipitate out.
The storm was so big, it went far beyond Dubai. It killed people in Pakistan. But it's also a reminder that as governments continue cloud seeding, weather fixes aren't as straightforward as they might seem. It's not clear how reliable this process even is, and even if it does work, it's not like you're creating water up there. You're simply pushing it to pour in the spot you want. The town or country downwind might say you're stealing it from them. Because even in a world filled by flash floods, no one wants to be left high and dry. to say, if you're running out of water, maybe don't have the world's most elaborate fountain show. That's what they've got in Dubai. Of course, then I realized the Bellagio in Vegas also has a pretty elaborate fountain. What is with all these desert fountain shows? Anyway, hey, the last day of voting for the Webbies is today. Start Here is in second place in the science and education category for this People's Choice Award, where we put forward this episode on microplastics. We're in second place right now to NASA's podcast. I love NASA, but you guys, we're just a few percentage points behind. We can do this. If you go to our link in our show notes today, that'll take you straight there. You just put in an email and go ahead and vote for us. It really does help. And if you voted already, thank you so much. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table.
What is happening here?
It's just beautiful chaos.
Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view.
To be honest, I was thinking about asking him for a foot massage, and then I just froze.
This is the best gig on TV.
And you know, anything can happen.
That is what we do here.
I'm not going to lie, the chair's a little small for my behind.
The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.